Blog Talk Radio.
Assalamu alaikum. This is the A Time for Justice with Attorney Pamela Muhammad. We are a new show, a premiere presentation on the Elevated Places Network. Again, we would like to welcome you to the premiere episode of A Time for Justice. This show discusses legal and current events in a roundtable discussion with legal minds. We discuss this country's century-long failure to apply, uphold, and enforce the laws, and the overall failure of the legal system to give justice, and the negative impacts that these failures have had on Black people and our Black families. Ultimately, we want fair dealing. We want justice under the law, but all too often, this is not the action that we see. Again, I would like to introduce myself. My name is Pamela Muhammad. I am an attorney. I've been practicing law for over 30 years. And as you all can see, this show will be done tonight in a roundtable discussion format. And I'm so excited for everyone who is listening in to our show tonight, A Time for Justice. The topics tonight are going to be the case for separation, as well as the recent lawsuits and other legal actions that have been filed that challenge the forced experimental vaccinations in the workplace. And so again, tonight we have guests who are going to participate in the roundtable discussion. We have a very special guest tonight, and many of us know her. We know her. She is the Elevated Places. Yes, she is our sister, Dr. Ava Muhammad. Now, Dr. Ava Muhammad is an attorney. She is actually a talk, she actually is one of the people who is the founder of the Elevated Places Network. She is a lawyer. She graduated from the law school of Georgetown University in Washington, D.C. This is where she received her Juris Doctorate. She's a member of the New York Bar. She currently serves as the national spokesperson for the Nation of Islam under the leadership of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. Dr. Muhammad has been featured several times in Essence Magazine and Virtue Magazine, as well as on numerous talk shows, along, like I said, with her very own program, The Elevated Places, on Blog Talk Radio. She's well received throughout the country due to her unique ability to connect with the human spirit, placing her in great demand. Dr. Muhammad has been happily married to Brother Darius Muhammad for over 30 years, and they currently reside in Chicago, and they have two daughters, Sasha, Sherelle, and are the proud grandparents of two grandchildren. Also, we have on our roundtable discussion for tonight another attorney, and his name is Warren Fitzgerald Muhammad. Brother Warren is an attorney, graduate of Texas Southern University's Thurgood Marshall School of Law in Houston, Texas. Attorney Muhammad has maintained an extensive practice in the field of entertainment law. He's actually also practiced personal injury, criminal defense, business litigation, and transaction law. And again, he's been doing this since 1979. Recently, Attorney Warren was appointed as judge in Houston, Texas. He's no longer in that capacity. He's returned to private practice, however, and he is now the proud, once again, with the law office of Warren Fitzgerald Muhammad. Our next panelist is another brother. His name is Brother Michael Muhammad. Brother Michael K. Muhammad is the owner of the Muhammad Law Firm. Michael graduated cum laude from Lamar University. He has a Bachelor of Science degree in criminal justice. He also attended the Southern Methodist University School of Law, where he earned his Juris Doctorate degree. Also, Brother Michael Muhammad, who has an office in the Dallas area, he's been practicing for 28 years. He's counseled and represented national public figures. He's also worked in the federal courts, the United States Court of Appeals, the Fifth Circuit, and the Texas Court of Appeals. His areas of practice are very diverse, but he has worked actually with the Employee and Labor Relations Board. And Michael, Brother Michael, has direct oversight of all civil rights matters, I guess, including EEOC, opportunities and labor relations. And he can tell us a little bit more about that position that he's been serving in for over 15 years in Dallas, Texas. So again, I am so very excited, and I want to make sure that the mics of the other panelists, the guests, are open. Sister Dr. Ava Muhammad, is your mic open? And Brother
yes,
Michael.
Okay.
Wa alaikum salam, Sister Dr. Ava. And Brother Michael Muhammad, Attorney Michael Muhammad, is your mic open?
As-salamu alaikum. I'm here.
Wa alaikum salam. I'm fine, by Allah's grace. Thank you so much. And Brother Attorney Warren Muhammad, your mic is open as well. Is that correct?
As-salamu alaikum. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. We can hear you just fine. So thank you all once again for appearing on our premiere episode of A Time for Justice. And, you know, as legal commentators, as legal professionals, it is such an honor. I know that we're talking about on this show removing those distractions. We're really looking at how the recent current events have impacted our perspectives of just really the court's ability to even give justice. Now, many of us, we've been around for a long time, so we have some opinions already. So we're looking at with so many legal commentators, this show's different. You know, many of the commentators that we see, they're always urging this continuation of researching of topics, you know, to ascertain, to figure out whether injustice exists. And, you know, and so with my first question, I would like to ask, you know, what kinds of challenges do we see as lawyers to this type of approach being taken by Black thinkers where at a critical juncture such as this, we're sitting around trying to figure out whether or not injustice exists. Yeah. Because I guess going into the point, because I know that's a you know, really broad question as well, but it really is relevant as we look at these news stories today, highlighting today, there's a story about the filibuster. Now, the filibuster is a strategy, and again, we talk about stalling. We're talking about distractions. We're talking about things that have taken our people away from justice, and we all know that in these courtrooms, a lot of times law is like a spectator sport in trials, So here we have a story where the Voting Rights Act and the filibuster looks like in the political realm, they're holding up the actual passing of these particular legislative. We see the Democrats and, you know, they're not getting what they thought, what we promised. And it's just really a back and forth with one of their very own refusing to support the filibuster and refusing really to even pass the Voting Rights Act as it stands. And I think the filibuster is really important because it really is something that we can look at as we've had the same type of conduct since slavery, where the political strategy with the filibuster was best used as a stall tactic to keep lawmakers from passing bills that help black people, such as anti-lynching laws, such as housing discrimination. I mean, how in the world can they sit and delay and talk and play games and make speeches? This is what filibusters do. And so what happens is that the law that is meant to help, which has oftentimes been black people, because they say many of these filibusters have killed laws that were supposedly going to help black people. See, we've been doing this for 400 years. So, again, I am poll taxing. They were trying to pass laws, and these go back from, like, the 1917s all the way up to 1994, where these filibusters have killed many of our laws. So, again, while many of our people have been hopeful, you know, they're disappointed, they're waiting for these promises that haven't been fulfilled, you know, they're kind of optimistic. But what do we see as lawyers? Do we think that this is the best approach today for freedom for black people? And, you know, how likely is this to be realized?
Sister Pamela, you know, with recent news and recent current events, the Senate was attempting to pass a bill that would protect the voting rights of people who have traditionally, their rights have been infringed. And there's one senator from West Virginia who's of the same party of those who indicated they would like to pass this voting legislation to help protect the vote of black people and others. He's indicated that he will not support the legislation. And in addition, he's indicated that he will not support any reforming of the current filibuster law, which I think it currently takes 3/5 of the Senate to break a filibuster. Now, how does that impact us? It impacts us the way that it has always impacted us, negatively. And our seeking, continuously seeking a solution through the political realm has not really been effective, though there have been some changes that we have benefited from overall. But what we need is real change. What we need is something to call our own. And the political process, as the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan has stated, is symbol without substance. And while we have received some symbolic, quote-unquote, advancements, we haven't received that which is really substantive, which is a land to call our own.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Thank you, Brother Michael.
Sister Pamela.
Yes, sir.
If I may address the first part of your question just briefly concerning the judicial area, and you were asking what do we think about the ability of the courts to give justice. One of the main things I'd like for our listeners to understand is that the court's ability to render justice is very limited. Although it may make rulings that have a long-term effect, the case can only rule on the case in controversy. That means it can only judge or render decision on that which is brought before it. It can't look out and seek to redress social ills or injustices, it has to wait until a case is actually brought before it in the proper manner in order for it to render some type of judgment. And then that judgment is only as good as it is until another court, either a Supreme Court overrules it or there's another ruling that renders that judgment no longer valid. So to hang our hopes and aspirations for freedom, justice, and equality on the judicial system is a very piece of thin ice that we're walking on. In my 41 years, I've seen some inklings of justice, but it's very seldom that we've seen actual justice rendered by a court decision.
Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am, Sister Dr.
Oh, I just like to echo the same posture of my colleagues that we can't dismiss or minimize what we have achieved during our sojourn here. Even while we were in chattel slavery, we were in the United States court system seeking justice. And we cannot take away from the value of what we have accomplished and the role that effective legal representation has played in our advancement, but we realize that there is a ceiling. And in the words of Minister Farrakhan, as long as we live with white people, we will live under white people. And truer words could not be spoken. We find ourselves like hamsters on a wheel, just spinning around and around. And with all of the deaths and injuries and emotional stress that we have experienced just in the fight for voting rights, something that is fundamental in a so-called democracy, we've had to die for it. And yet every few years it's threatened. And now it is completely coming apart. However, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan did say at Savior's Day 2020 that we're experiencing and witnessing the unraveling of a great nation. And so this is our time to reassess everything we're doing and to look now beyond the confines of this system that's built on a doctrine of white supremacy and move out on obedience to God, which is to come out of her, my people. Just quickly, I would say the most recent series of events that I think is a very powerful illustration of the dilemma we're in as black lawyers and then as black people are the state-sponsored murders of black people, yes. Male, female, young, and old. And, you know, we've just worked within their system to seek settlements. And I have to say, I have the utmost respect and admiration for people like Benjamin Crump and others who are out here demanding that there at least be some sort of compensation to the families, that there at least be a level of accountability. But for it to take a torture murder of a black man, George Floyd, thanks to a 17-year-old black girl filmed on in HD for the whole world to see, it took that to get an arrest and a conviction, and we have yet to see what the sentencing will be.
Yes, ma'am. That is beautiful. And as you're talking about separation and the case for separation, the attitudes of those people who built towns, the black towns, the successful ability of us to do for self and to be self-determined rather than, you know, there's always, like you say, it's everybody's hand working together, it's the and in both, and many of us want to build for self. We want to be independent. So from those attitudes, from some of the builders, what type of attitude did they have when it came to seeking to integrate themselves into the larger into their oppressors, really, the terrorists who, you know, who had just recently enslaved them were, you know, this is something that I think many people, as you're saying, Sister Dr. Ava, after seeing Ahmaud Arbery, I remember some sisters you brought on your show that talked about separation and how they were building towns because they just wanted to live in safe environments. They really wanted to take their lives into their own hands and try to provide for their families. So is that mindset something that we saw historically amongst black people who built for themselves, built these wonderful towns? Prior to integration, yes, ma'am.
Go ahead, brother.
Yes. Who is that, Brother Michael? Or
yeah.
Brother Warren? Okay.
Well, I think, Brother Michael, were you speaking?
Go ahead, Brother Warren.
Okay. Well, I'm involved in a project right now that brings this whole issue to the forefront. I'm currently in the making of a documentary. We just finished the principal photography, and inshallah, we'll start editing in another week or two. But it's a documentary based on the life of my maternal grandfather. His name was Chappie O'Shea. And it also involves some of the history of the community known as Acres Homes. It's in Houston, Texas now, but back then, in my childhood and before then, it was called Acres Homes, Texas. And it was a self-sufficient black community, much similar to what we know in Tulsa, Oklahoma's Black Wall Street. And in interviewing one of the senior pastors in the community, he's 92 years old. I just interviewed him about 3 days ago. He made a comment that was very profound when he said, those men and women who founded this particular community and those like it had the mentality of the slave. And it kind of shocked me to hear him say that because of the stereotyping of what we call a slave mentality. But he said that the slave wanted, the ex-slave wanted to build a self-sufficient core community. In other words, he did not want to have anything to do with the black man. He didn't want to live with the white man. He didn't want to work with him. He wanted to get as far away from him as he could.
Wow.
And I think the history bears witness to this, even in what we know about the General Sherman's enactment, General Order 15, I think it was 40 acres and a mule. When they met with the black community and asked them what they wanted separate land. They didn't want to live with white folk. They wanted separate land where they could live among themselves and establish their own community. In watching the documentary on Tulsa just the other night of the burning of Tulsa and Black Wall Street, they noted how initially Oklahoma was populated with the Indians and black people. They first brought there as slaves of the Indians who were then set free, and then other free blacks migrated to Oklahoma, which was Indian territory. And they did not want Oklahoma to become a state in the United States because they knew the southern white man would flock there with his racist attitudes and white supremacy and destroy their opportunity to build independent black communities. So I think we have to be careful on how we allow history to be portrayed, as particularly young people have a habit of saying, I'm not my grandparents. In many respects, you need to be like your grandparents.
Hmm.
because they wanted some land of their own and to build a reality of their own.
Mm, beautiful. Yes, sir. I guess, who else? Someone else? Brother Michael. Yes, sir.
Like Brother Warren, my great-grandparents also founded a town in southeast Texas. I think, though, that the mindset of our people today, as the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, that immigration was a trick. And
yes,
the trick has been going on at least since the 1960s. And many of our people today have been so indoctrinated or absorbed or taken in by what they see, what they've become a part of in this society, that the prospect of separation is foreign and scares them. But I think one of the things that is important, as Sister Abel was saying, the solution is from God, and both the Holy Quran, the New Testament, and the Old Testament speak of separation and of the Jesus separating the nation. And in a secular sense, one of the things I think our people don't realize is that separation is not really something that's uncommon. It has happened many times throughout history, even in relatively recent history. For example, you have India separated from Pakistan. You have Bangladesh separated, India, Pakistan separated from India, then Bangladesh separated from Pakistan. You have South Sudan from the North Sudan. You have Namibia separated from South Africa. You have this thing called Israel now with the separation with Pakistan. Eritrea separated from Ethiopia. So separation is not something that's uncommon. In many of the white nations, you have one that has separated from the other, even this one separating from Great Britain. So I think it's important for our people to begin to understand that not only in a biblical or Quranic sense is separation something that's mandated, but separation is something that has and does occur with nations.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, Sister Dr. Ava, did you want to add in on that, this particular topic regarding separation? Because, again, listeners, and I just wanted to interject real quick, Sister Ava, because Sister Ava has went around the country with town hall meetings, speaking to thousands of our people on this topic, our listeners, to remember that. Yes, ma'am.
Oh, I just wanted to join in again with my colleagues and agree wholeheartedly. Number one, that, of course, integration was a false promise. There is no such thing as integration in the context that the Caucasian gave it to the black man in America. It's impossible to achieve, and even if it were, it's not desirable to achieve, because the system is set up, and we're witnessing it and experiencing it, that the only way we can come close to assimilating is to basically disappear, because to be acceptable in white America, we have to see ourselves through the lens of white people, which means we have to accept their view that we are inferior. And this has been at the root of division, fighting, in-house fighting. Racism has spawned colorism, so that with white having been established in their reality as supreme, then this creates a whole spectrum where, okay, the ultimate goal in life is for me to be a white person, And if I can't actually be white, then let me be as close to white as possible. And so then among all of those who are not white, because remember, this country recognizes two kinds of people, white and non-white. That's all they have. So you either are white or you fall into the category of these degrees of inferiority. And the pathology makes it so that if you are one-eighth, I think in slavery the structure was the one-eighth black is an octoroon, one-quarter black is a quadroon, half black is a mulatto, and then you become a full-scale Negro after that. And then among us, black step back and all of this, if you're yellow, you're mellow. I mean, these are manifestations of an illness that is suffered by the Caucasian people. It's at the root of their making.
Yes, ma'am.
By Dr. Yacoub. They're the product of genetic manipulation, and this is why they spend all their time doing the same thing. And so it's really a powerful impediment to any real achievement, because we spend so much time listening to them, trying to explain ourselves to them. And as you have said many times, Sister Pamela, during these cases that have occurred after, in the wake of these horrific murders of our people, the way white people compartmentalize a human life, and this back and forth discussion about reasonableness, using the law, as the book says, they make mischief by means of the law. And so here, police officers just gunned down, just murder in cold blood. You know, Dallas, you know, kicking in doors. Young man sitting in front of his TV, getting off work, eating ice cream. Young lady who's a first responder in her bed at 2 a.m.
Yes, ma'am.
George Floyd did nothing to anyone on the day he lost his life. But we have to listen to witness after witness discussing what was in his bloodstream, what was in his system. Oh, he had COVID at a certain point. Oh, he took drugs. Oh, he did this and that. But as the prosecutor said correctly, whatever he had in his system, he was alive and doing pretty well from everything we could observe, until Derek Chauvin put the full weight of his body on George Floyd's neck and
yes,
killed
ma'am.
Him. But we're the only people that have to suffer through this. And we have to come to terms with the reality of the best and only solution.
Yes, ma'am. That is so beautiful. Yes. Yes, sir.
I'd like to pick up on something that both Brother Michael and Sister Ava have brought up concerning the this concept of assimilation. Now, if we go to the premise of the ex-slave did not want to assimilate, he wanted land of his own,
right,
a community of his own. I have posed the question to myself. I actually discussed it in the work that I published, The Case for Separation. I had to go back and read it again myself.
Right.
But
okay.
I posed the question, where did integration, this concept of this desired integration, come from? So everything starts at some point with the teaching. And I think it's instructive that we look at the work of Gunnar Myrdal with his work of called An American Dilemma, which was published in 1944. That work was commissioned by the Carnegie Foundation, which was one of the primary institutions that issued grants and funding to colleges, particularly historically black colleges. And they commissioned Gunnar Myrdal to do a study of race relations in America, and he published that book in 1944. The book was so popular, and I'm lifting this from an article I read called The Lasting Legacy of an American Dilemma. That work was so popular, they said that it was distributed widely to colleges, schools, armed services, government agencies, and civil rights groups. And that with the increased teaching of social sciences after World War II, a generation of future racial reformers in the Kennedy and Johnson administration of the 1960s grew up on an academic diet of Myrdal. Now, what's important about that is that what did Myrdal actually say in his work on an American Dilemma? And the core of what he said, and I'll quote, was that Myrdal suggested that, or he offered that it was to the advantage of American Negroes as individuals and as a group to become assimilated into American society and to acquire the traits held in esteem by the dominant culture. Education was the path to achieving this. So we see this was a teaching then that became the core teaching in the universities and the political halls that influenced the thinking of those who would become future leaders of black civil rights movement, what have you. It was published in 1944, the year that Martin Luther King entered Morehouse College.
Yes, sir. And you know, that is so beautiful, Brother Warren, because as you and I were talking, this show, we want to remove some of those distractions, you know, because, again, it's kind of like, okay, so we had a propaganda movement that pushed our people by giving them wrong information as to the solution. There were people who knew that us staying amongst our enemies was not a good idea and were very willing, as your person told you about your grandfather, they wanted to build. They didn't want to be with white people. You know, and so it's interesting. That's why we're going to remove some of these distractions, and we want to help our people to see through some of these mechanisms. Because I just want to bring up real fast, you know, I oftentimes like to talk about the 13th Amendment and the history related to that. And so we look at the 13th Amendment with the promise of freedom, but whether or not that actually happened, as we know, we never got the rights of citizenship. And early after slavery, we had collusion. It was known that whites and government actors and Jews were acting collusively to keep black people in a condition of involuntary servitude. You know, they had agreements. You know, I saw a Law Review article that quoted the planters. They said, you know what, we'll have an understanding among ourselves. You won't hire mine in, and I won't hire yours. Then what's left for them, they're attached to the soil, and will be their masters forever. So I'm saying that to say that not only are these the same type of collusion activities to try to, you know, like you say, circumvent us back into some assimilation for the money, but then our people, our grandfathers, our great-grandfathers, they knew at one time that these people were not to be trusted, not to be around, because they had experienced that type of terrorism. So, you know, I think this is a great discussion. And anybody else, because we do have another topic that we're going to be discussing, and of course that is the second topic about the workplace and the mandatory, the lawsuits that are being filed to challenge these forced experimentations that people are, they're trying to push on our people in the workplace. And we know that, you know, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, you know, we've campaigned, don't let them vaccinate us. The minister has said, stay away from these vaccines. And I saw an excellent article that our sister, Dr. Ava Muhammad, wrote in this week's final call called A Call to Action, demand that the United States government halt the use of COVID-19 vaccines. So I know she's going to share some of the very important information about that story and what's going on there, as well as we talked about a lawsuit that was filed in Houston where there were over 100 employees, 117 employees of a hospital, Houston Methodist Hospital. They filed a lawsuit because they did not want to be guinea pigs. They did not want people trying to force you to put something into your body to keep your job. This is what one of the plaintiffs is saying. And so we know we've got this history of them murdering and experimenting on us as blacks in the past. And then there's some employment issues here as well, I know. So, I would like to start that part of the conversation as well as, remind our callers, if you all would like to ask questions, we are going to get some questions in. And so what you do is you press 1. The call-in number is 563-999-3065. And if you would like to ask a question or make a comment, please press the number 1. So as we talked about with what's going on with these shots, does anybody want to begin? I know, like I say, there's an article in this week's final call, and Sister Dr. Ava, she was in this article. There's some commentary about just the collusion and a petition being filed by the Children's Defense. I believe they're the Children's Defense Organization.
Health
Defense. Okay. So, Sister Dr. Ava, could you tell us more about what's going on with that particular petition?
Yes, ma'am. And I do want to thank Sister, Managing Editor, Sister Starla Muhammad, for her recommendation to the publisher, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, for whom we thank Allah over and over, because this newspaper, the Final Call newspaper, is the single newspaper in this country and probably on the earth that is full truth from cover to cover. It represents completely independent black thinking. And so it was the decision of the publisher and the managing editor to make this the news of this petition the cover story for this week's final call. We all should get this paper, and we should all make sure that everyone we know has a subscription to this paper, the final call, either digital or hard copy or both. But to get to the story itself, the Children's Health Defense Fund, led by Attorney Robert F. Kennedy Jr., on the 16th of May, filed a legal action against the Federal Drug Administration, the Food and Drug Administration. And so I wrote an article, seek the involvement of our readership and our community in helping to push this petition by commenting on it, by going to the website, which I'll mention before we go off the air. But I think it's worthy for us to note, since we are talking about going beyond the framework that we have been functioning in terms of legal representation and taking on the U.S. government, which we know is corporate controlled directly, and all of that is important, but the most important thing that I wanted to bring out in this article is from a spiritual standpoint, and not let us lose sight of the fact that last July 4th of 2020, when the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan delivered the criterion, he warned all of the indigenous people here in America, Africa, and all over the globe to stay away from any COVID-19 vaccine that would come on the market. And at the time he said it, the vaccines were still in development. And yet he spoke with authority and said, this is death and we will not accept it. And we will view any effort to force us to take this vaccine as a declaration of war. And now, 11 months later, three of these vaccines have been deployed beginning the 20th of December of last year. So now, in the sixth month since the deployment, there's been over 5,000 deaths from these three vaccines, from Moderna, Pfizer, and Johnson & Johnson. You've had 39,000 cases of urgent care, 5,000 life-threatening cases, 17,000 hospitalizations, 571 miscarriages. The list goes on and on. And the most frightening thing is the fact that according to Health and Human Services, then 1% of fatal and adverse events are ever even reported. And so now the Children's Health Defense has demanded that the FDA revoke this emergency use authorization for the COVID vaccines. And you all know that the media saturation has been unparalleled. You can't turn on a TV or radio or go on social media without these vaccines being pushed down our throat. And what is horrific about this, as we sit here as lawyers, this constant, relentless characterization of these vaccines as safe and effective, it's not only untrue, it is illegal. It is illegal. And the petition cites, among other things, the code of federal regulations. They keep saying these vaccines, you hear it on the Today Show and CNN and all this, they've been approved. They have not been approved. Emergency use authorization means the reason you need it is because you have a product that has not undergone sufficient clinical trials. So you're not allowed to say it's safe and effective. It's designed for a situation where you have a lethal disease, an epidemic, for which you have no other treatment. When, A, there's a multitude of treatments that are very effective, COVID-19 is a treatable illness, particularly if you get to it early. It has a long incubation period. It takes 14 days to incubate. There are so many interventions for that. And the U.S. government under Big Pharma has sat on every possible therapy and treatment. You're not even allowed to talk about vitamin D3 or sunlight. Sunlight itself kills COVID. We know soap and hot water kill it. But none of this is talked about. The whole country has been made to believe that the only solution to COVID-19 is the vaccine. And so you'll see that. And then let me quickly, Sister Charlene Muhammad, our national correspondent, wrote an article about the lawsuit, Sister Pamela, on the part of the 117 workers, and they have been suspended from their jobs.
Yes, ma'am.
As we speak, yes, ma'am. And I'm sorry I got on a soapbox.
Oh, no, thank you for that information. I know, Brother Michael, you as well have looked at this issue from an employment lawyer standpoint. Would you like to weigh in on any of what's going on in Texas, as well as what Sister Dr. Ava was telling us about?
Well, yes, ma'am. And, of course, I concur with everything that Sister Dr. Ava just articulated. I think if you live in Texas, I'll start with this. If you live in Texas, Governor Abbott issued an executive order, and his executive order prohibited any governmental entity from forcing you to take the vaccine. And the basis of his executive order is exactly what Sister Ava just articulated. It's experimental. It doesn't have FDA approval. You don't have to take it. If you want to take it, it's your choice.
Yes, sir.
The executive order from Governor Abbott also provides that if you are a private, if it's a private entity, a private organization, if you accept any governmental funding, you can't force people to take the COVID vaccine, nor can you ask a person whether or not they have had the COVID vaccine. According to his executive order, quote unquote, that's your private health information. So if you live in Texas and you're dealing with a governmental employer or a company or any organization has accepted money from the government, they cannot force you to take this vaccine via Governor Abbott. Now, in the context of employment law generally, Sister Pamela, it's always important to make a distinction between private employers and governmental employers. And it's also important to be aware of your state laws as well as any federal laws and how the two interact. I'll just say generally, the question is not whether an employer can force an employee to take a vaccine. That's already been decided. That's old law, that an employer can force an employee to take a vaccine. The question is, can an employer force an employee to take an experimental vaccine, a vaccine that has not been approved by the Federal Drug Administration? And so that's the question at issue with the case in Houston. There's old cases that deal with the question of the flu vaccine, et cetera, things that have been approved. But for a vaccine that has not been approved, can they force you to take it? Well, the EEOC recently issued guidance maybe a week ago. I think it was June 1st. The EEOC being the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. And they stated in their guidance that an employer can force an employee to take the COVID-19 vaccine with certain exceptions. These are the exceptions that they articulate. One, you have a religious objection. So for all of the believers out there, you have a religious, you have a religious exception. For others, it's going to be a little more difficult, but one exception is your religious beliefs. The other is if you have a medical condition. You have protections under the Americans with Disabilities Act. So if your employer comes to you and they attempt to mandate that you take a vaccine, you simply tell them that that's inconsistent with my religious beliefs and I need an accommodation. At that point, they have to engage in something called the interactive process, where they sit down and try to figure out how to accommodate you. The EEOC actually lists some possible accommodations in their new guidance, one being the employee can continue to wear a mask. The employee can work 6 feet from everybody else. The employee may work on a different shift there are any number of things is decided on a case-by-case basis. The only way the employer can escape the requirement for reasonably accommodating your religious belief is if it would pose an undue hardship. So undue hardship generally means more than a de minimis cost, but for most big employers, it's extremely hard for them to get to show that it would be an undue hardship to accommodate a person. And in the context of the ADA, the undue hardship standard is a little more stringent than it is in the religious context, but still they would have to demonstrate that there's an undue hardship to refuse to accommodate you. Now, I had an opportunity really right before the show to read the petition in the Houston case, and I noticed that the attorney pled that the hospital rejected the request of the employees for accommodation. I don't know why they rejected the request. I don't know whether they concluded it would be an undue hardship or whether they questioned the sincerity of the religious belief. Now, they shouldn't generally question you in depth about your religion. They should pretty much, you know, accept what your religion is. But this hospital is obviously on a mission to attempt to force everybody to accept the experimental shot or the experimental vaccine. But if you have a sincerely held religious belief, you're entitled to an exemption. Now, generally speaking, nationwide, all 50 states have an exemption for medical reasons. 48 states have an exemption for religious reasons. And now I'm talking about generally all vaccines. 20 states have an exemption for other reasons, like conscience, or you don't believe in it. With the EEOC, if you reject the vaccine because you question the science, because there are differing medical opinions, because there are different treatments available, because you just don't believe in vaccines, that won't fly. So you're going to have a religious reason, a medical reason, to make a strong effort or case for getting beyond any vaccine required.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting
not
in the round table.
Not for us. Not
right.
For us. Those who are believers, God's man in our midst has declared, do not allow them to vaccinate you.
That's right.
With their history of treachery. We that declaration from the leader himself. So we're on firm ground. In terms of the religious exemption.
Yeah. And I think, like the lady is quoted in the newspaper article, the plaintiff in this Houston lawsuit, she said she'd rather be 80 or 90 years old on my deathbed knowing I did the right thing rather than doing something for money or to keep a job. So, I pray that everybody who, you know, wants, who values, that she's valuing her life over death. And I think it was interesting, her attorney is quoted in the newspaper as saying in that petition that it's illegal for this Houston, you know, hospital, Methodist hospital, to force these employees to do it. And one of the examples he said, now how can you have the right under this experiment to either opt out or not take it, but then your employee is telling you you don't have that right? So there's a lot of law that is not settled that's going to really, I think you see just a major, major need for people to stand up for their rights. It's a life
and
death.
And I would like to add, Sister Pamela, the EEOC reached the recent guidance. It mentioned the ADA, the religious exemption, and other law. So what is other law? Other law is, in my opinion, the law that prohibits forcing a person to subject themselves to an experimental vaccine. That's other law. So people need to be aware of that and conscious enough to raise it should they be forced into that predicament. And I agree with you. It comes a time in life where you have to stand on all ten. And, you know, if you think you're going to face an adverse circumstance, you just have to face it and move on or do whatever you're going to need to do to fight it. But I don't think that any person who does not believe in this should voluntarily subject themselves to an experimental vaccine of which we don't know what the effects will be 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 20 years from now. You don't know how it's going to impact you because it hasn't been in use long enough for any of us to know. I guess I'll stop there.
Brother Mike, I have a question for the sake of argument. Do the right to work or at-will employment statutes, say like in Texas, or at-will state, do they play any role in this discussion?
So, you know, employment in Texas and employment in a lot of other states is at-will, which means that the employer can fire you for any reason or no reason at all. However, there are exceptions to the at-will doctrine. Some of the exceptions are you can't fire a person because of their race, religion, sex, national origin. In the context of what we're talking about now, religion is something that's protected under Title VII, just as race is protected under Title VII. So it would violate, it would still be a violation of law, even in an at-will state, to fire a person in violation of Title VII or the Americans with Disabilities Act. The other exception, at least in Texas, is that you can't fire a person for refusing to do something that's illegal. So
exactly.
You can't ask an employee
right.
to perform an illegal act. The employee refused to perform the illegal act and get fired. That's also illegal and would still constitute a cause of action, even in the face of the at-will doctrine.
Yes, because I think I read in that article that, you know, that was the allegation by the attorney that you're forcing his client to do something that was illegal and that he would
yes.
not allow that. And I think also it leads to Sister Dr. Ava's article in the final call where it talks about coercion and, you know, and so this liberty interest that we have to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, I think all of those issues are in play here. But we're going to take a caller, if we don't mind. We have Brother Abdul Arif Muhammad, and he's going to open his mic. Brother Abdul Arif Muhammad, attorney.
As-salamu alaykum, Sister Pamela.
Wa alaykum salam, Brother Arif. How are you, sir?
I'm wonderful. Been listening to the show and really appreciate listening to all my brothers and sisters and colleagues tonight. You all, excellent, and congratulations on the launch. We need
you,
such
sir.
A show like this, and as much as they frame mischief by means of the law. You know, as I was listening to you all, a thought came to me, because I've had a number of people, of course, reaching out to me, seeking an understanding of how to confront this religious exemption. And of course, as I've been reviewing many of the state statutes, which they do exist, I think Brother Michael may have mentioned it, and salam alaikum to Brother Michael, Brother Warren, my great sister Ava, all the great mighty brothers and sisters of the legal community, but more importantly, Muslims and believers and followers.
And real quick, we want to acknowledge that this is our general counsel for the Nation of
yes,
Islam.
Yes.
So.
That's right.
We're all,
the general
counsel. To Allah. So I've been studying yes. this, and one thing that came to my mind, all of them are now trying to, though the law says you should not inquire into the substance of someone's belief,
okay.
they're doing this a little differently now, where they're actually asking to state what is that particular religious belief that says you should not take the vaccine. So they're actually violating the law, in my opinion, by even asking you to state it. And what came to my mind, I have an excellent universal religious principle that I think everyone should use in keeping with the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, who's God's man. The first principle in religion, if we're talking about the Lord of creation, is that he should give us life and that we have the first right to protect that life. And so it is against my religion for you to stick me with something for which a side effect of it could be serious injury or death. So that's my religious conviction, to protect my life. So if you ask me what my religious conviction is or my religious belief, my religious belief is to live, that God gave life in it, and he gave it to me, and only he can take it, and I have the right to protect it. That's my religious belief, self-preservation. And since one of the known side effects now of over 5,000 people, which is more than any other kind of vaccine that we know, is that one side effect of it is death. Others are blood clots. Others are Bell's palsy. Others put in the final call starting the last several weeks now, the showing our people the horrors of the impact of the vaccines. So if you want to ask me what my religious belief is to live. God gave me this life, and self-preservation of my life is a part of my religion. In fact, it's the essence of my religion, to live.
Yes, sir.
So if they ask you to explain it, that's how I would explain it.
That's right.
Because to try to find something out of the Bible or the Quran or, you know, some other sacred text, it's a universal principle of God. Of when you say religion, religion is a way of life. So
yes,
my religion is to live. And the man that I believe in has declared from God that this vaccine is aimed at killing people to cull the population. So as Sister Minister Ava said earlier, as was said to Mr. Dershowitz when he talked about snatching you and taking you to a doctor and sticking you, that if you try to force us with your army, then that's a declaration of war, and we're going to fight to protect our life. Of whether you are an employer, a college person, and there are other things that you can do, such as a simple question to those who are mandating it, saying, so if I have some adverse reaction, are you all going to cover all of my medical bills? Or if I die, are you all going to pay me and give me an insurance policy to protect me in case you try to kill me?
There are
things you can do to push back, but you have to be willing to take a stand and be able to say, you know, all laws. First of all, let's be clear. There is no federal mandate. There is no lawful mandate anywhere in the country concerning this. It's all predicated upon fear, coercion, and intimidation and threat of law. So the Holy Quran says, we will cause you to be try something of fear. You see, this is what the enemy is doing. And so my religion is to live. And therefore, this vaccine has the potential of killing me, which is against my religion. That is my religious reason why I am not taking this vaccine. In addition to God's man told us what you're trying to do with it. Just a thought to share, because as Brother Michael said, at some point, you just got to take a stand.
That's right.
And say, we're not doing it.
That's right.
So
those were my thoughts.
And
yes,
go ahead.
To your point, Brother Arif, the core of this is to live and not be allowed to be made equivocal and shaky about your position. And this is why we closed the article that is in the new final call with that specific quote from Minister Farrakhan when he spoke to Mr. Dershowitz and then said to the people in the very next sentence, you have this one life.
That's right.
Fight like hell to keep it. And fight like hell to destroy those whose heart and mind is to destroy you and take your life from you. So don't take the vaccines. And we're not dealing with something, we don't know the long-term effects, but as Attorney Abdullah Muhammad just noted, pointed out, and this is why we're going to have this running tab in the final call weekly in the COVID section on the climbing deaths that are being suffered. These vaccines have already proven, as Brother Arif just said, one of the side effects is death.
That's
death
right.
itself. Then from a legal standpoint, look at the fact that the 1976 swine flu pandemic vaccination mm-hmm. campaign was canceled after 53 deaths.
Mm.
Now, in less than 6 months, these COVID vaccines have killed more people than all available vaccines combined over a 15-year period. So this is why in this issue we're calling for people. We're not just saying don't take the vaccine. We're saying get up and let's all join on together in a coalition. All those who want to do, as Minister Farrakhan said, fight for this one life. We only have one. We're not getting another one in this third dimension on this planet Earth. And as the Holy Quran reads, as the Allah says to us, how can you deny Allah when you were without life and he gave you life? And his man, that was not Minister Farrakhan, that was Allah telling us through Minister Farrakhan.
That's right.
We will not accept death. And I hope the people are listening and taking comfort from what our general counsel and the lawyers are saying. We have a strong position on this. All that's needed is for you to...
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. No, your eyes.
Well, thank
totally
you all. Thank you all.
Thank you, Brother Abdul Arif Muhammad.
Yeah,
and as
you, brother.
Yes, and while you're on the line, I wanted to announce that Brother Arif will be a guest roundtable panelist on our next show, the upcoming June 15th show. So we look forward to hearing from our brother more in depth so he can give us that knowledge and wisdom.
Yeah.
So thank you again for calling on this premier show, Brother Ara.
Well, may Allah bless you all and let us all strive to continue to do that which Allah will be pleased with us all for.
Yes, sir.
I'd like to add one more point, Sister Pamela, that we can make it really easy, really simple for our people who are listening. The wisest thing to do would be to join the Nation of Islam and get behind the leadership of Muhammad bin Farrakhan.
Absolutely.
And you already have an umbrella or an ark to board with an umbrella to keep you from getting rained on. Just join on with
Absolutely.
The Louis Farrakhan and seek the benefits of the protection provided by Allah.
Yes, it's so beautiful. And you know, I think Sister Ava has also raised in her article this issue about just the whole, what do you call it, unethical. They talked about the illegal and unethical coercion and compulsion surrounding the administration of these vaccines. And, you know, question earlier was, is there a comparison to what we saw during the Tuskegee experiments and slavery, where they want to force people to just murder us because you feel like we don't have our rights to stand for our lives. So I just wanted to put that out there. And
yes.
Yes, ma'am. And we do have another caller. Go ahead, Brother Michael. I'm going to take the call.
Just in terms of, you hate to make these types of comparisons, but just in terms of life lost, this has already been more devastating than the Tuskegee experiment, though it's being conducted by those with that same type of mind, and maybe even worse in terms of the type of mind that we're dealing with. But there has been, you know, as Sister Ava said, nearly 5,000 deaths through May. So, I mean, just the death toll alone, in addition to the adverse events, makes this a bit worse than what Tuskegee was.
Yes, sir. You're so right. Okay, we're going to take this caller. We have our brother Louis Ali. Brother Louis Ali.
As-salamu alaykum, family. As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum salam,
sir.
Thoroughly enjoying the show. And it's amazing how much you can learn by having the opportunity to listen. I've heard it said before that they make mischief by way of the law.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Bible, in Romans, it says that the wages of sin is death, but the gift of God is eternal life in Christ Jesus, our Lord. And in other places it says in the Messiah. Now, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad taught us that integration is a sin. And so the wages of sin are death. And the more we are confined in integration, we won't be able to stop the killing. They took the miscegenation laws off the books, so they've already poisoned us with their blood. And we have to get to the point, and I think we're getting to this point, to where we're seeing that we absolutely cannot economically prosper, mentally prosper. There's no prosperity under integration. It's just death. At some point, we're going to have to repent and apologize and atone to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, because he warned us not to go into this. And the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and Dr. Ava has really highlighted it, and so have you all, about this injection. If we take this injection, I just know that it's going to be immediate death. We will not prosper. And at some point, we're just going to have to fight for our way of life. And so I heard Brother Arif, and I'm enjoying the show. But I really don't – I think the chief of all sins is this integration. And it has done something to our morality to where the level – we used to be able to watch the news and be able to tell who done what crime. But this integration has done something to our morality to where now many of us who look like black people have an insatiable appetite for filth and indecency, the kind of filth and indecency that I never thought that we would participate in. And so we're going to have to make some real laws. And the first law we have to make is the law of be ye separate, so that we can regain our consciousness and our sanity. Because, I need prayer, because there are some people who look like us that I definitely want to separate away from. I don't want to be with them. I used to want to really unite and be with everybody. I don't want to do that anymore. I want to be with the people who want to build a nation, and they don't have to be perfect, but they need to want to be decent. And so I'll just keep chiming in. But I'm really enjoying the show, Sister Pam and Dr. Ava, and we're wanting to rebuild our communities and make them safe and decent places to live.
Praise to Allah. Thank you. Walaikum salam, Brother Lewis, for calling in. And he's so right. I think he even brought up a real principle in law, which is we talk about precedents. You know, everything, every time we look at history as to what happened in the past, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad taught us that. You know, history is, I think, best qualified to reward our studies. So when we talk about
most qualified,
thank you for that, Brother Michael. So I think when we look at the history of Tuskegee, we look at the history of 1866 and how these were the same activities to try to keep us enslaved. We got to keep that in mind. We got to take one more caller, Brother Warren. Go ahead, and then we're going to take one more caller because our time is running down. Yes, sir.
Okay, I'll be very brief, but the brother's comment made me think of something that we have to – the minister talked about language and understanding words, and he would tell up a book called English Lesson C1. And we have to begin to read the words for ourselves and understand their meaning and not let people tell us what they mean, and that is good for us. And a quick example – is the Brown versus Board of Education ruling, which has been hailed as a landmark decision for us, but it actually says that separate but equal is inherently unequal, which is actually a nod to white supremacy.
Right.
But they tell us that it's in our interest and it's good for us, even though if we actually read the words and the meaning of the words themselves, we should understand that it is a death nail for us. Whereas Plessy versus Ferguson said if the facilities are equal, then the fact that they're separate is of no importance because they are, as far as facilities, equal. But we are told that was a tragic ruling for us. So we have to be able to read for ourselves and understand the meaning of words for ourselves and let people tell us what it's supposed to mean.
You are so right. That's awesome. Yes, sir. Thank you. So we're going to take this call from Brother Hoyle. Brother Hoyle.
Assalamu alaikum,
Brother Hoyle.
Walaikum salam,
sir.
Congratulations to all these superstars on here. All praises be to Allah.
Oh, praise
I wanted to
Allah.
And Sister Ava, and beautiful, beautiful. I wanted to add there is a exemption form that Dr. Aleem talked about. It's off the Solari Report by Catherine Austin Fitz. It's an employee and school disclosure form for COVID-19 injections. And I know we have one in the Nation of Islam. And that's a beautiful one. I think, I'm not sure if Dr. Aleem did that one, but I use that one with my son. But Dr. Aleem expressed that we could use this. It's called the Solari Report by Catherine Austin Fitz, and it's an employer and school disclosure forms for COVID-19 injections. So I'll let the attorneys check on that, because by next show, what you guys think of this? It's called the Salah Report by Catherine Austin Fitz. It's a good one. I've read it, but I wanted to get you guys a view on that. If you can read it by next show and give us some insight on that. But congratulations. I look forward to the future, and this is beautiful. Sister Pamela, keep up the good work, sister. Assalamu alaikum.
Yes, all praises are due to Allah, and thank you so much, Brother Hoyle, for calling in. Walaikum salam. Yes, so we're down to the last 5 minutes of the show, and thank everyone for their participation. It's been beautiful. And so if everybody would like to give a closing remark, that's the floor is open. Yes.
Oh, yes,
yes,
ma'am.
Yes.
Well, I'll go ahead.
Thank you.
I do want to take this opportunity to ask everyone to visit me at MinisterAva.com. And I have some books and lectures that you might want to partake of in ebook form. I would close by saying that I loved what our general counsel brought to the table. As Brother Michael advised us, and this is why a legal roundtable is so important, because our people need legal advice. And it is so beautiful to hear Black men and women who are willing and desirous of just enlightening our people freely over the airways, because what our brothers brought this evening is so valuable, not only in principle, but as a practical matter. And I love that delineation. And as Brother Arif said, you know, at the core of our belief system, which we know Islam is more than a religion, it's a way of life.
Yes.
And I think as word goes out about this phenomenal program, and people can visit blogtalkradio.com, and you'll tell them, I'm sure at the end, well, we are at the end, but they should come and hear the replay of this program. So thank you, Sister Attorney Pamela, Brother Attorney Michael, Brother Attorney Warren. Thank you so much.
Yes, no, thank you. Thank you. And Brother Warren, Brother Michael, did y'all have any comments you'd like to close with? We're down to 3 minutes.
I'd like to say thank you, Sister Pamela, for inviting me to be on this on this show.
Thank you.
An honor to appear with Sister Ava and Brother Michael. I'd just like to leave my email address, warren@wfmlawfirm.com. If anyone has any questions or want to reach me, you can reach me at warren@wfmlawfirm.com. And if you desire the book, A Case for Separation, you can get it at Amazon. You can pull it up by the title, A Case for Separation, or under my name, Warren F. Muhammad.
Yes, sir. And Brother Michael,
I'd like to also thank you, Sister Pamela, for allowing me to participate on your inaugural show.
Thank you.
I want to thank both of my colleagues, Sister Ava and Brother Warren. I'm appreciative of the opportunity to be on the program and to share with the community. And we look forward to your future shows. And I'll give my email address to michael@muhammadlawfirm.com.
Yes, sir. Thank you. And, yes, these brothers will be back, because this is a roundtable discussion. And hopefully our dear sister, Dr. Ava Muhammad, will also come back and join us. We'd like to thank her and the Elevated Places Network team. We have Sister Donna Muhammad, who has just so graciously been operating the board. She is the executive producer tonight. Sister Rona Muhammad, who is another person on this team, who has been so helpful to us preparing and launching this first program. Also, I would like to thank once again our beloved Sister Dr. Ava Muhammad, because the Elevated Places Network is a launching pad that she is allowing us to use as lawyers to bring this information and to share. And so once again, I would like to thank her just tremendously. And I would like to encourage everyone to tune in to her show, Ask Dr. Ava. That show is on the Elevated Places. It comes on Thursdays from 7. It starts at 7 o'clock, and it is excellent. So I do appreciate, once again, thank you all. And again, you can listen to replays on the Blog Talk Radio platform of this show and other shows that Sister Ava has done. Thank you again to the callers, the guests, and all contributors. And assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum
salam.
Thank you.